this is a special episode for me because I'm visiting with one of my favorite people, a guy named Joe Hodge. I've been mentoring Joe over the last 2 years as he embarked on the journey of starting his own home building company. Joe's first build is an AB spec home project over in East Austin in the Montopolis area, if you happen to know Austin, which is near the airport. It's this gentrifying, really on the outskirts of where all the urban development has occurred, but everything's kind of moving that way, and there's a lot of new construction starting to happen over there. And of the many inspiring things about Joe, this guy had as rough a start as one could in this business. He got in at the sheer height of the frenzy in 2022. Think impossibility to get labor, soaring labor and material prices, land costs inflated, amongst all kinds of other challenges. And then, of course, shortly after he got in, Fed starts raising rates. The bottom falls out, especially here in Austin. We're in a bubble here locally. But Joe, this guy, he used to be a boxer, and he has that fighter's mentality. And I'm telling y'all, Joe stayed in the fight when a lot of guys would have just shriveled up and folded. And ultimately, he came out ahead. He finished the project a few weeks ago, and he's already sold the front unit, so now he just has the back one to sell to completely close out the project. And if that's not enough, just to top things off, Joe's also an AV high school teacher at a local high school here in Austin. So for him, starting his own home building company represents a path to a better life for him and his family, to build their wealth, to get their financial independence. This guy is everything that's right within our industry and our country. He's a self-made story. He does not quit. And this is just the beginning of the Joe Hodge story. So I hope y'all are inspired by this interview. I'm sure you'll learn a thing or two as well. Y'all enjoy. This episode is brought to you by our brand partners, Quaker Windows, a new company that we have integrated into our portfolio of construction. We are absolutely thrilled with the quality of this company's windows. We buy ours through a local vendor here in Austin called Grand Openings. They've got locations in different areas. Mark Carter, who's the head of Grand Openings here in Austin, has assembled an incredible operation, a great team. We love working with them. We love buying these Quaker windows. They got a really high quality suite. This episode is also brought to you by Sub-Zero Wolf. We have been installing these appliances in our home almost exclusively for years now. And well, enough said, they've got enough recognition in the industry. You know, these are top of the line appliances and our customers absolutely love them. It's a huge brand enhancer for us. So thank you to our brand partners. On to the episode.
It was interesting just to go through the whole process of selling your dream, right? Something you just like, hey, I wonder if I could build a house and it really worked.
You did it.
Yeah.
You sent me that CO a few weeks ago. How did it feel to get your first CO?
I put in the words, man. It was just the pain, the frustration. Like the mental, I feel like I grew mentally, right? I just hit some points that in some situations that I've never been in and had to think out of in this process taught me that. In as many heartaches and just disappointed, it was all worth it because you see the light at the end of the tunnel. You achieved a goal that you had dreamed of years ago, and I even thought it was impossible. But somebody else believed in the dream, and now they're living in this home. So it's like the full circle of it, man. And I couldn't do it without your help, man. Your help, your systems made it so step-by-step easy to follow, man. So I appreciate you.
I didn't hear much from you. You had it down. You had it down. I was expecting to hear more from you.
Yes.
I don't know. You just do your homework. You get behind the scenes and you just grind and you just figure stuff out. And that's one of the critical ingredients for a good builder.
Yeah. Yeah. I felt, okay, Jerry's giving you a lot of the work. And I just didn't want to be one of those that just constantly, how do you do this? Even though I probably should have, I wanted to at least show that I tried to find the answer before asking you. I guess that's what I hold my kids accountable for, right? Being in education, I'm willing to answer your question, but have you checked your resources? Have you asked your neighbor? Did you Google it? Okay, what's your question that helped you get through it? And so I try to apply that to myself in our situation.
If I was you, I would take that philosophy. I'd make it a core value of your company. Now that you're going to start growing your company, make that a core value. Make sure everybody you hire has that same mentality, because okay. That's a really good quality
okay.
to have.
Okay. Well, I appreciate it. Yeah, man.
You're there. That's a very tangible finish line, isn't it? You get that CO and you realize, and then you close on the sale and you realize, like,
yeah,
I actually achieved what I set out to do.
It's okay. Let's do it again.
You're ready.
Bigger and better.
You're ready. That's what I want to see you do.
Keep
moving up. You got everything you need at this point.
Yeah.
You got the platform, the systems, and everything to do it. So now you just got to find that next deal.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that's something that I want to be more, I guess, create a system for too, as well, is finding that next deal. And I'm sure that's what everybody does. But just having a system of finding the deal and then the investor. What do you come with first? Do you come with the investor or do you come with the deal first? You just, the whole dance, but finding more of a system for that as well.
We have a few key performance metrics in our company, what we call KPIs,
okay,
which are metrics that we feel like are critical drivers for the success of the company. So for instance, one of our KPIs is how often we do a draw for each project. So we're measuring how quickly we get to draws, because for us, that's a real key component of how successful we are at that point in time.
Yeah.
If we're slow on draws, then that means that something's amiss and we're not generating cash flow as quickly as we would like. And if we're hitting it, then it means that we're doing well.
So is the key to have less draws, or is hit draws by a certain time? Is that what we're saying?
Draws faster. Draws, the faster you can get draws, it's like
more work is being done.
Yeah, it's just like rocket fuel for the company, for most builders, in my opinion. The faster you can get to draws, the faster you turn over assets, which is one of the three most important performance metrics in terms of your return on equity. So return on equity is basically your net profit margin, which obviously everyone knows is really important,
right,
times your asset turnover, which is in our business essentially how fast you can finish a home and turn that asset over, move your construction team onto the next project. Mm-hmm. And that is a multiplier. So that the results of how quickly you can turn over an asset, meaning a job, mm-hmm. it is multiplicative mm-hmm. in your success. So if you have a net profit margin of say 10% or 12%, and you can take your asset turnover up by 50%, then it magnifies mm-hmm. all of the results in the company. And then the third one is your debt ratio. But anyway, so back to one of our other KPIs is what we call dry powder, because we do a lot of spec building, just like what you did. So it's our dry powder analysis. And that is, we have about 20 investors in our company. And one of my jobs is to constantly know about where we are with the amount of dry powder that our investors have to invest with us in another project. And that's just periodic check-ins with each of those investors, seeing how we feel like they are doing in terms of, do they have 100,000? Do they have $1 million mm-hmm. to invest dry powder? And that way it's just like a directionally accurate number to know, all right, at this moment in time, we've got $4 million of dry powder. So if we're, mm-hmm. if our average project requires $1.5 million equity, then mm-hmm. we've got a little over two projects of dry powder that we can take down at the moment. So, okay. To your question, what do you do? Do you get the deal first? Do you get the investors first? I think it's a little bit of both. You want to always be grooming your investor pool to know about how much they have. And then that's going to help you identify your project base. Mm-hmm. How many projects are you pursuing? What size are you pursuing? Mm. So I think you've got to have that dry powder analysis first, and then you can go after the project. And then once you have the project, hopefully you'll be able to call those investors that you know or you think have a certain amount they're willing to invest, and you can lock that commitment up pretty quickly after you have the deal.
In your systems, what is the time period between communication with the investor of, hey, this is what we got and this is what we're looking for, this is what you do, to actual acceptance, right? Because depending on how you acquire the asset, right, whether it be wholesaler or if it's just off market, time can be key, right? And so if it's a wholesale deal, you may not have time to go shop, right? How do you approach that?
Yeah, so sometimes we have to just take the risk or the gamble that we'll have to go hard on our earnest money with a project before we have 100% commitments. Oftentimes we will, actually.
Okay.
But I've been doing it long enough where I've got a good instinct to know that we'll be able to raise that money.
Nice. And okay.
We've never, knock on wood, fallen short. Whenever we've had a deal, we've always been able to fund it. The ideal thing is you get enough of an option period to where you can go get your package together right away, send it out to investors and get those commitments. Nice. Where you know 100%, but that's not always the way the market works.
Yeah.
Sometimes you just have to take a little bit of a gamble. And so that's going to be a little bit of an instinct that you create over the years.
Okay. It's good to know.
But it's a risk spectrum too, right? Yeah. So you want to be careful that you don't go tie yourself up with a project that goes hard where you could get sued for specific performance if you don't close and then you just can't raise the money for it. So you got to understand the risk spectrum of what you're signing up for as well.
Yeah. Okay, that's a good viewpoint.
With what you're doing right now, you've got a bunch of wholesalers working in the areas where you're buying. I also like the idea of just developing connections with the neighbors and the community. That'll be one of the best type of contracts you can get is whenever you're working directly with somebody. Okay. So on your job site, didn't you have something that said we're interested in buying properties in this neighborhood?
Yeah, on the fence, on the fence line, we had what the outcome of what this particular project, Galindo, would look like. And then we had a whole, probably I would say 15 feet of something. We buy any house or any properties with a company phone number.
Did you ever get any leads off of that?
I got one or two calls, but nothing dissolved or nothing came out of it.
Yeah.
But I did like that idea. And I think if that was in a place where more traffic came, because the only people who saw it were the people that were going home on that street, that might have been more helpful. Yeah. But yeah.
This is, I think, why you want to get as many signs in the ground as you can in your target niche and your target submarket.
Nice.
Because every single sign you have becomes additive to the rest of your portfolio. And the more times people see your signs, whenever they go to sell one day, your name is going to get recalled in their memory as much as anyone else.
Right.
And so that's why one of many reasons why we have a really hyper focus in our
area,
niche where we are.
Have leads turned into conversions with that method for you?
Yeah.
Nice. Okay.
For sure. The second deal I ever got, this was now 15 years ago, was during the construction on the first house I ever built. There was a fire down the street and the house essentially burned down. And the owners, it was a lease house, but the owners were driving past my job site one day and I was out there and they rolled down the window and said, "You want to come look at buying this one?" And that's how I got a lot of my original ones. Now we've got multiple spokes in our wheels. The realtors in our markets know us, and so they'll bring us leads as well as the neighbors. So you want to have multiple spokes in your wheel of your acquisition strategy?
Writing this down.
But wholesalers are a good one. The only issue with wholesalers is oftentimes they'll try to box you into a contract where you don't have much of an option period because of the way they structure their contracts with the actual seller.
Well, we're good. I'm just taking notes of what you're saying. I'm good.
So what was your low point over the last year and a half building this?
It's a good question. I think my low points came in phases, right? Just have
like waves.
Yeah, just as I thought this was my low point, then we go to the next one. But I think the very first part of it came in the pre-planning phase with our plans and permits. And then I faced a situation where we sent everything to the city. But I think on the follow-up, I had to have my architect at the time meet with the city or something. There were some questions, and he just went AWOL on me.
I remember that.
Yeah, he was missing for 3-4 months.
And the engineer, too. He just took forever.
Yeah. And so those, so that was like the initial, you know, this being your first project and you don't know what to expect when something comes and you just don't know how to handle it. Is 4 months in this field, time is money. That plays a factor into it. And so I was really just at a loss of words and what to do, just with not having that architect and not getting the response that I needed. Eventually it came around, and after the project finished, he told me what was going on at the time. But during that time, I just didn't know what to expect, what to do. Do I just get a whole new contract and start from scratch? And so just the mystery of not knowing was a low point for me. But what I learned, and the information that I received, is we came to the dance, we're going to lead to the dance all together. And I think it would have been more time and more energy and effort had I got another architect. But we were able just to saddle up back on the horse and just keep the project going. So ultimately, it worked out. But that was three or four months of frustration and where is this guy and never doing this again. But it worked.
I remember that. Yeah. And that was probably a combination of the specific moment, which was during the post-pandemic boom, and everybody was spread thin. So there was probably some of that. And then also it might have just not been the right hire.
Right.
The right person to do the architecture.
Yeah. But
we had that conversation, and that's one of the difficult lessons to learn in this business. I think I might have counseled you on this. It's that once you set out on that ship with a certain contractor or an architect or whoever, a project team member, if someone's not performing, the natural inclination is to cut ties and bail and go to someone else. And truth be told, you're usually better off just trying your best to fill the holes in the ship and get it to where you're trying to go, rather than jump into a brand new ship, because you don't even know if that new ship is going to have holes in it as well.
Yeah.
The time that you're going to absolutely sacrifice to back at zero is a 100% given of a loss there. And so the best thing you try to do is just try to get it across the finish line. And you did that.
Yeah.
It took a long time with him, but I could see how that was a low point.
Yeah, definitely. One thing that I took away from that, being a new builder or just jumping into real estate, anyone who just jumps into real estate, but specifically a builder, you try to meet your budget, right? You want line item budgets and you want to stick to your numbers, and you try to cut costs in certain areas to perform better in other areas. But one thing that is crucial is the team of people that you have. And contractors are, you know, some might have a higher dollar value. And if they have good reputation, I tell anyone, take care of your team. Do invest in a good team to support you. And I think I went with this particular person just because of their track record and the cost at the time. But I would have not had that deep worry if I would have just invested in a good team, because it would have came out cheaper. Not to say cheaper, it would have been less expensive, because that 3 or 4 month period ended up costing me more at the end. So investing in a good team is key for any new investor or builder. Yeah, don't cut on that part.
Yeah, the price tag is not the cost oftentimes, right?
That was it.
Any other really difficult, noteworthy parts along the process?
Yeah, things that you can't account for. You cannot control this market. The market may start one way and it may end in different. And so within that time, you're going to have to find that midpoint. Where can I lean this out? So put a cushion at the end of it. Right. And we started off post COVID when the market was just on fire.
Yeah.
And it cooled out just a little bit. Right. And so now we're still in. And so that was a real big worry then, but things have progressed. Building one is sold. Building two is still on market. We're going into summer. Maybe things will go back up, but we're still looking at ways of, okay, how can we level this thing out to where we still have a happy ending? And that's just part of the learning process. And we're still working on it, but I'm hopeful about it.
Yeah. If you could go back and do anything different, I know you'd hire your initial project team a little differently. Yeah. What else would you do?
What would I do different? It's a great question. I think I would stick to the proven track record, right? People are in positions for certain reasons and consistency in their talents. And if I can rely on their consistency to in their talent, I think that would have brought me through quicker in this. I don't know. I only think my first journey in this building this house was different from most is because I had a really good system behind me. When I say it's a step-by-step system, all you do is just read the next, I think that's very helpful. So there are some things that I would do differently, but besides the team, just off the top of my head, I think, besides, that's the only thing that comes to me, right? So that's a good question, but I think I would do a lot of things similar, granted that I had a proven system and following those steps on that system.
Yeah.
Now.
Now that you're through it, you got those low points behind you. That happens on every project, every year. I think that this is a business that's about solving problems.
Yeah.
And especially when you're the owner of business in home building or construction, really any business, that's what it's about, solving problems. And that's what you had to do. You got thrown in the fire. And each time, the nice thing is every subsequent project, you're a little bit wiser than the last one. Yeah. And so those problems can become a little bit more manageable, a little bit more infrequent in nature, but they're always there.
Yeah.
And so that's part of what everybody's got to get squared away with mentally before they start their own company, is that's what you're signing up for.
100%. One thing does come to mind on the particular project that I was working with. I was just so excited just to get my first one. And I took a lot of just first response from the people who I felt were professionals, because I didn't know any better. In this particular house that I purchased, or the slot that I purchased, had a power line running through the back. And if I look two houses to my left, I see another property that has the same idea of building one and building two. So I thought it would be fine. But by the time that I get in, I build it out, I can't make building two as bigger because of these power lines that's there. We've already purchased the property. We're already invested. One thing that I would adjust or change is doing more research and homework as much as I can before getting into it and coming
up front.
Your
due diligence
before getting it.
The lot before you actually get married to it.
Yeah, yeah. And that was just excitement. Hey, got the opportunity, let's do it. But really researching, knowing your deal before you jump into it.
Yeah. That's a great point. And that's something over the years that we've developed. Every single project, we learn some new thing and we add to what we call our due diligence checklist and our architecture checklist.
Yeah.
Which are things to look out for. And over the last few years, one of the things that we've gotten a lot more calculated on and scientific on is the lot width in the neighborhoods where we build. Mm-hmm. We've got a certain lot width that we want to achieve so that we can get the architectural programming that we feel is necessary for the homes. You've got on that checklist things like the power lines. You want to know where those power lines are. And if there's going to be a big easement running across the backyard, that might invalidate all of the good factors that lot has to offer, and you may want to walk away from it just because of that.
100%. Knowing your due diligence and knowing what you need to be successful and sticking as close as you can to that metric, whatever that calls for in your system.
Agree. That's a great point, Joe. Now, what's next? You ready for the next one?
Yes, I'm ready. I'm diligently looking, but I'll be honest. As much as I want to jump into another one, I feel like I have a little bit of PTSD just from the time delay and the situations. And so I'm very proactive in running numbers now. I'm dotting all my I's, crossing all my T's, because I want to be 3 times as successful in this project and run it 3 times quicker and more efficiently than before. And if that requires me to be slow in the beginning, I'm for it. I'm for it because I know it'll fit the flow and structure of our system if I'm that way now. And we're out there looking now, finding our niche areas of where I want to stick to. I'm looking forward to the next project right now.
Do you think you'll stay in that same area of East Austin out by the airport, or are you looking in different neighborhoods as well?
Wise man told me, he said, be the king of your sandbox. And so I'm sticking to
smart
this area for right now, but I'm looking I talked to my realtor about this. I'm looking for some of the most consistent areas in my city that, well, consistent, that do good consistently, regardless of where the market has been in the past 3 or 4 years, right? So are there some zip codes that stay consistent? And I'm peeking over there. But from where I'm at right now, I have been heavily been looking in my area, my sandbox, for the next project.
Okay.
Yeah.
Great. I got two more questions for you, then we'll let you go.
Okay.
So first of all, what advice do you have for a builder that's just starting out?
Yeah, it's a great question. For the new builder, it's a great question. For the new builder, know your exit before you enter. What are the numbers that you want to hit? What does it take to hit those numbers? And then team. It's all about getting a good team. The house starts with the foundation. Do you have a good crew to lay that down? Is your framer, is he good? Is your interior designer good? Are they the professionals in their field? Manage them very well. I've heard all kinds of stories about contractors, some who are the best in the world and some who've had the worst experiences. Regardless of what kind of contractor, regardless of what kind of team, all teams need a good manager, GC, and that's going to be you. Manage your team, know the ins and outs, know the personalities, know the schedules, know everything about your project to make it more efficient. The more you know about it, the better you can handle any situations or prevent any situations that will come around. And so just studying your project, whatever you don't know, research, ask questions. I think just, again, speaking to the new builder, there's going to be a lot of things that you don't know that just haven't come up. That you don't know just because they haven't come up, and then you won't know to even think that till it does come up. Don't run from it. Run towards it. Try to find 3 or 4 different answers or solutions to the problem, and then pick the one that best suits that need. And then the last bit of advice I would say is get a system, or find a mentor, or find someone who has a program who can help you with steps along the way. It's a very long 7 to 12 months of building a house. And so the more guidance that you have, it is more helpful along the way. And I would preach that till I can't breathe anymore. But just getting a system is what's helpful.
I couldn't agree with you more. Yeah, I made all those mistakes early in my career.
Yeah.
But where do we find you? I know you're pretty active on social media. So
yes.
Let's let our builders and our audience connect with you. Is that Instagram, Facebook?
Instagram, Facebook, Twitter. At the Joe Hodge, THEJOEHODGE, at the Joe Hodge is Facebook, Instagram, Twitter is where you can find me.
At the Joe Hodge. Good. Easy enough.
Yes, sir.
All right, Joe. Well, this was great.
Definitely.
Thank you.
I appreciate the opportunity and learned so much from you. So thank you.